Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. I'm Sarah Polinchek, here with my co-host.
And your co-host is John Summers Flanagan. Hi there.
Hi. Today we're talking about how parents can help children deal with grief.
Ooh, another challenging topic. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the things we can say about ourselves, Sarah, is we are not afraid to talk about hard issues.
We are not afraid.
We are not afraid also to say thank you to the Charles Engelhard Foundation for supporting this podcast series and mm-hmm. to the National Parenting Education Network, or NPEN, there at npen.org if you would like to go there. Mm-hmm. And of course, if anyone out there listening thinks, I'd love to be a sponsor of the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast, you can give us an email or a call and we might be able to work something out.
I bet there are so many people who want to be a sponsor, those same people who are liking our podcast and rating them, right?
Pretty exciting. You know, today is one show that's about big psychological truth in life. It's almost kind of like the emotional and psychological version of gravity.
Okay.
When there is loss, it follows that there will be grief.
Yes.
Right? It's really an A-B relationship. If you love or value someone or something, and you lose that person or that thing or even an ability that you might have through an accident or a disability, you will feel a range of emotions in reaction and you'll experience grief.
And grief includes so many complex emotions. There's just a huge mix. There can be sadness, anger, guilt, disappointment, devastation, certainly. There can also be relief, and sometimes when we feel relief after a death, there's guilt that follows there. And because these relationships are so complex, the reactions that follow the loss of the relationship is really complex. So that's why we're having this podcast today.
Yeah, and what you said there is one of the things that is, to me, really important. It's kind of new. Every relationship is nuanced, right? Mm-hmm. Unique relationships. And sometimes we have thoughts or behaviors. Sometimes we'll regret things that we have done, or sometimes we will wish the person, I know this is a terrible thing to say, but it's true that some people will wish for a person to die, and that can complicate everything, and every relationship is so unique. Every grief response in some ways then is also unique. It follows, I guess.
For sure.
Yeah. I have a personal question for you.
Okay.
Okay. Do you have any grief memories of your own from when you were a kid or a young adult that stand out?
I definitely do. You know, grandparents, you know, my grandpa especially, I was very, very close to him. And it's funny, there's 9 grandkids and we were all really close to him. He was just one of those really, really cool guys. And I spent most of my summers with him. And one of the things that I did is I made a really big scrapbook and all of the kids put something in there that was memorable. And that was such a fun thing to do because I was able to get the perspective of everybody else's joy and love for him and hear their stories. And my grandma, before she died, said it was probably the most special thing anyone ever gave to her. And so I really am a big believer in those activities that you can do to help process grief.
Very nice. A meaningful activity that really honored your grandfather's life.
Yeah. And I didn't set out doing it thinking, oh, this is how I'm going to work through my grief. It was just something that I was moved to do.
You had some energy and it took you in that direction.
Yeah. It's really great.
When you say that, it makes me wish I had done that with my grandfather. And my main grief memory is of a grandfather, too, and I can still feel very intense emotions about that if I spend time thinking about the way in which my relationship with him was kind of unique. It makes me feel sad now, and it's been dozens of years.
That people are important to us. We love them.
Today we have back on the show Dr. Tina Barrett from the Tamarack Grief Resource Center in Missoula, Montana. Tina is a force that really helps educate schools, communities, parents, families about grief. And so maybe she will have some ideas about how we can also address our own grief issues.
That's great.
Hi, Dr. Tina, and welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us again on the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. It is an honor to have you on the show.
There's a lot to talk about with life and death and hope and healing, so I'm glad to be back.
And today we're focusing more on how parents or other caregivers can help children through a grief process. And my first question is, of course, now we know there's lots of false and inaccurate information out there. And so I'm wondering, what do you see as some of the common misconceptions about how children grieve?
There's so many places we could go with this. Let's think of a few we want to look at together. One of the big ones would be that kids and adults grieve the same way. And I think we assume that our children might grieve similar to how we do, or kids of different ages would grieve similarly, and kids and adults in general just grieve very differently. And then as they reach different ages and stages of cognitive and social development, they integrate those losses into their life all over again.
Okay.
So a big myth would be that kids and adults grieve the same way. They don't.
As I hear that, I think to myself, another natural thing is just for one human to project or assume that another person is having the same kinds of reactions. And it reminds me of something I heard you say before, and that is how important it is for parents to be curious about what's going on with their children around grief, because otherwise you might not know.
A death in the family rocks the whole family, and we do tend to assume that someone is going to grieve the same way as us, or if they're not, that perhaps they're not grieving.
Right.
And our challenge is to stay close, and how can we support one another in the family, but also honor that we might journey with this completely differently.
And so since you brought up the family, and of course, oftentimes when children experience grief, the parents are also experiencing grief simultaneously because it's affecting everybody in the family, maybe the loss of a sibling or a grandparent or another parent. How can parents deal with their own issues in, I guess, an effective way, and then also try to help their children?
You've acknowledged a huge challenge for parents. They are the primary support, so the better we can support parents of grieving kids, that's the best we can do.
Okay.
We really want to support kids most effectively by strengthening their parents. I think parents, another myth could be, I shouldn't allow my child to see my pain, my despair, my tears.
Mm-hmm.
And we really have learned from journeying with kids over the last couple decades, kids get incredible strength from their models of grief.
Mm-hmm.
And when parents give kids permission to grieve by giving themselves permission to have their range of emotions and questions and searching and pondering and honoring and remembering and reinvesting in life, the kid gathers permission to do the same.
Absolutely. So I hear a couple of things. One is, I guess as outside people, and maybe your whole agency, Tamarack, it's so important to support the parents because the parents are going through such a huge challenge. And then also, parents shouldn't feel inhibited, like as if they should not show their grief and their sadness. And I'm also reminded as we talk about that grief is so complicated and the emotions are mixed and there may not just be sadness. What about anger? What about when anger kind of flares either in the parent or the child? What are some healthy ways that people, I know I'm asking you lots of easy questions.
I love that you brought up, we're talking about death and grief and we're talking about anger, and all of these things can be subjects that we want to veer away or protect our children from. And actually, anger is going to be pretty common with a grieving child, because when we feel like life is unfair or something's unjust, it's pretty natural to feel angry. Also, when we feel out of control, anger is a very empowering emotion. And so a couple different thoughts that come to mind, and one is, just because a child is grieving, we're not giving them permission to hurt themselves or somebody else. So we're really looking at, how do we help keep this child safe and keep us safe emotionally and physically?
Mm-hmm.
And that being said, hoping not to veer away from these strong feelings and to understand what's under them. So again, getting really curious of, what is this anger telling me? Are you feeling out of control? Could you benefit from more structure? Are you afraid? Mm-hmm. Do you have tension in your body? Where is that tension? Should we sing really loud? Should we run? Should we create something together?
Yeah.
How do we help release this tension and help you feel more peace in your body during this really tricky time?
Yeah, part of what you said reminds me of something that the famous Carl Rogers said, and that is, all the emotions are okay, but all the behaviors are not.
Sure, yeah.
And I heard you say, well, if there's anger, maybe there's some ways you can sing loud or express it and honor it and yet not hurt yourself or anybody else, because that's not an emotion, that's a behavior, and that behavior could be destructive.
Absolutely. That the anger is very okay. The strong feelings that you alluded to, that it might be anger, it may be rage, it may be confusion, loneliness. How do we explore this whole range of emotions and not make you wrong? We don't choose our feelings. We can have some choice over our behaviors.
Right. Yeah. The feelings are natural.
They come up.
And we can't choose them. But we can guide or choose our behavior.
Absolutely, and help increase that tool belt for these strong feelings that maybe a child's never had before. And that little tool kit of coping skills is ill-equipped to deal with this stuff. So how do we help shore them up with some creative outlets and physical outlets and symbolic outlets and just excuses to play and be themselves? Words will fall short with kids in particular. Adults want to talk about loss.
Right.
And cry, and that may or may not be a child's experience. They're going to make sense of it through moving through the world. And so we want to listen to, what are you telling me with this anger or this strong emotion or your experience? Mm-hmm. How do I help you feel safe? And they're very likely to not hold the intensity of the emotion as long as we do as adults. And it doesn't mean they're done grieving or done feeling anger. Mm-hmm. They're just going to move between different emotional spaces more rapidly. We've got to kind of keep our knees bent.
That's a really good thing to remember, and that their emotional pacing might be quite a bit different and probably more rapid. Now I have a really hard question. You ready?
Bring it.
What about when the child feels anger toward the parent and maybe even sometimes says things like, it's your fault? How can parents handle that? That seems to me like maybe it's not super common, but I would guess that sometimes children feel angry at other people and blame other people for the death of someone they loved.
That sometimes our anger can just come out sideways or be hurtful. So as a parent, we're going to go back to, what's our core message for our kiddo? Mm-hmm. What do I want you to know? It's, I love you. I'm going to keep you safe. Mm-hmm. And I think it's also really okay to say this is hurtful and get your support around what you need. We want to understand what the child's trying to tell us through their anger.
Yeah.
If they're saying it's your fault, do they have questions about this? Do they have questions about the death or the culpability? They wish so desperately it were different. They're probably giving you a sense of power that, mm-hmm. wow, you could have done something because you're this powerful being,
right.
So it must be your fault. And you really wish you could have done something possibly to have prevented this child from experiencing this death, preventing yourself from experiencing this death as well. So it's going to kick up all your strong emotions, and it will hurt. It could also be a sense of pushing you away if this child is concerned about losing people they're close to.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of levels of what could be going on. So again, we can't say for sure with any child, but our hope would be, what's our core message?
Yeah.
I care deeply about you. Mm-hmm. I love you. I will do everything I can to keep you safe. That's hurtful to me.
Yeah.
I want to understand what's going on for you.
Yeah, yeah. Three big things there. Stay stable. Show your love and your attachment and bond to the child. You're there. Don't let the child's anger push you away, right? And then it's okay to say that what you said hurts and acknowledge that. In some ways, that's kind of a limit-setting thing. And then stay curious and keep exploring and keep in conversation with your child. Fabulous. Wonderful advice.
That's one place also it could be helpful to bring in outside support. If the language is really hurtful to you, to have a voice of someone else or a neutral party who could sift through some of those really tricky thoughts and feelings with a kiddo.
Yeah, I was going to have, I have a question about, you know, when is it time to seek some professional counseling? And it sounds like what you're saying is that when some of the rawness of those exchanges with your child gets pretty intense, that might be one sign that some outside support could be useful. But I'm going to ask that later, and for now I want to go from the whole issue of anger to guilt, because I bet sometimes kids and parents feel guilty about the death of the person. Any quick tips on how do we help kids through guilt? How do we help ourselves through guilt?
Isn't guilt just a huge, tricky emotion? This is another one of those that we want to rescue our children from, or our partners from, or our friends from. But when our child is feeling really guilty, like, I feel like I caused this in some way, we are desperate to take that away from them. Like, mm-hmm. no, honey, you didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of really hearing them, we've just discredited their openness of sharing their feeling with us. And so our challenge can be to say, that's not my experience. I don't see how you're guilty, but I want to understand mm-hmm. your experience and talk me through it. There can be a feeling of guilt, especially in the case of death by suicide, mm-hmm. that people can have really strong feelings that something they said or did or thought influenced this behavior that someone died by suicide.
Right.
And our thought is that it's never just one thing. So a piece of education needs to come in, too, that suicide is a result of a horrific compilation of factors in one mm-hmm. moment of time. Mm-hmm. And it's never just one thing.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing, but right. moving in and through the guilt and giving room to voice it.
Right. And I have heard people say, well, maybe there's something I could have done. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Maybe I could have done something to save the person from death by suicide. And I hear you saying that the guilt's natural. No need to just wipe it away. Better to explore it, talk about it. So let's talk about, well, what are the signs, at least from your perspective, of when some professional counseling or psychotherapy might be a good or recommended option for a child or for a parent?
Earlier, we spoke a little bit about how everyone grieves differently, mm-hmm. that some people want to talk, some will cry, some won't, some will be doers or create something or grieve more symbolically. What a general guideline is, if it's not hurting you or someone else, it's probably okay. So a place to pull in support is if a grief response is harmful to mm-hmm. the child or to the people around them, or if it's just inhibiting the functioning so much at school or pleasure in activities that it's just really impacting quality of life. And I think for a lot of parents, seeking outside support has been incredibly beneficial, just especially when there's been a death of a spouse or a child in the family, because the family system is hurting so enormously that to have someone else hold their child with a professional set of eyes and ears and wrap them in their heart and care and to help offer feedback going, okay, this is a hard, hard time and your child is doing okay, can be incredibly validating and helpful. Or this is a really tough piece that we're going to build some additional coping strategies around or address these fears or distressing images that are really concerning for this child, impacting their sleep or their ability to return to school or become close to people anymore.
Okay, so really, any signs of things that are destructive to self or others, maybe some self-harm, also things that are impairing, big sleep problems, those might be times when you would seek out some professional help. And I hear you saying, although it might not be a perfect fit for everybody, having an outside objective person be a supportive part of your network can really help, really take some of the pressure off.
And I really, it comes back to the myths question right at the beginning of our conversation, that just because a child has gone through an enormous loss doesn't mean they would be maladjusted.
Right.
A grief response is a very natural response to loss, and kids are incredibly resilient. And it's very okay to pull in the support that strengthens you and your family during these times.
Okay, that's great. One last question. I know you do day-long workshops on grief and grief with children. I know you have week-long camps, grief camp, and I know you have kids do things in the outdoors that sort of honors the life and the death of people they love. And I wonder if you have any quick tips from all those experiences that you would share about ways to help kids through, not as if they're going to get to the end of the grief, right? But ways to help them through this path or this river of emotion and grief that they're experiencing.
That's a fabulous question. Again, we're looking at each child, each person
yes.
doing this so completely uniquely, and going back to any resources or any way we can support the parent. This is an excuse for radical self-care for the parent
yes.
to experience any centeredness. I also think that let's talk about an example of a creative and a physical and a symbolic outlet, because mm-hmm. some kids might benefit from the symbolic, lighting a candle at dinner or wearing a shirt. Other kids might benefit from creative outlets of let's go gather rocks and leaves and sticks that symbolize our journey with the person we've lost, as well as our grief mm-hmm. and a memory that we hold and a symbol of hope, and we're creating a shrine together or a creative project. together. Some kids like to read or do writing activities, so mm-hmm. creating a memory book or a journal. And so just trying to create these different outlet opportunities for our kiddos that integrate the physical or creative or symbolic as well as the talking or narrative outlets for
nice,
them.
Nice. So really many different ways of honoring the memory of the person who has been lost is what I hear you saying.
Yeah, I really appreciate that language. Thomas Attig talks about how death ends a life but not a relationship. And so much of our challenge with grief is how do we access this relationship and continue to gain strength from it? How do we continue to honor it? How do we continue to let it shape who we want to be in this thing called life? And how do we continue to honor it through our movement, through our living legacy of how we live in the world? So I think so many of these activities give permission to give voice to this relationship continues, whether it's been a day or a year, or 10 years, or decades, that I continue to say this name, or honor this relationship, or do things because of this relationship that's important to me, even though this person is no longer in the living world.
Tina, I know a little bit about the amazing things you do here in the Missoula community and in the region of Montana, and I want to thank you for all that, and I want to thank you for being on our show and sharing a little bit of the wisdom that you have.
Oh, John, as a parent, thank you for supporting parents everywhere.
You know, John, as I was listening to you and Tina talk, there were so many things that I felt like, well, I'm going to take these away for my own life and my own family and also for some of the clients I might be working with. One of the things that really stood out for me was when she said, when we're helping kids through grief, it's time for radical self-care for the parent.
Mm.
And I thought, yeah, radical self-care, that is an important thing to remember. We have
right.
to do that because chances are we'll be embroiled in our own grief as well as trying to manage the emotions of our kids. So
mm-hmm.
it's important.
It's a little bit like that overused metaphor of the oxygen mask
yeah.
that you put on yourself. I think actually in this case, you have to put it on yourself, take it off,
yeah.
you know, kind of share it back and forth because you're both going to be involved.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things that stood out to me was the whole issue of anger. And anger, one of the ways I like to think about it, I use this metaphor when I'm working with kids, is that if you take a pop bottle, so let's say you took one, Sarah, and
mm-hmm.
you shook it,
mm-hmm.
and you kept shaking it, and then I said, Sarah, open up the pop bottle, you might make a mess. And that's the way anger is if you are really angry in the moment and you open your mouth, you can make a mess and you can say things you don't mean. And sometimes you have to clean up after yourself because you've made kind of a mess.
Mm-hmm.
And the carbonation in the soda is a little bit like what we call in psychology the cognitions or the thoughts that we have. And so a lot of times the things that are making us angry are the thoughts that we're having over and over again. And so like if you're my mom and I'm mad at you because my dad died,
mm-hmm.
and maybe you don't look as sad as I think you should.
Right.
Right.
My response is not exactly how it should be.
It doesn't.
No.
It's you know, and I think Tina talked about those unique responses, right?
For
and
sure.
yours is different than mine, mm-hmm. and I'm thinking you should be really devastated just like I am. I get mad at you, and I start thinking, you're just a terrible mom. You were a terrible, you were terrible to our dad. And if I think those things over and over and over again, pretty soon I'm going to explode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes, as Tina said, as the parent, you're just going to get
pop all over me.
a mess thrown all over you.
Yeah.
And you both have to kind of clean it up together because it comes so naturally from the unique grief experience of our kids.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be that one of the things that would help is to help your child calm down. But still, like Tina had said, be curious and explore and try to calm your child down at the same time and try to stay calm yourself.
Yeah.
Because if you get mad and start thinking, this child is just so ungrateful, you're going to be shaking up your little carbonated head and you're going to get angry back at your kid and it's not going to be a constructive experience.
Right. And I'm just thinking, though, too, imagine this parent who maybe doesn't have a lot of support systems is experiencing their own grief and then they're also got a kid who's really, you know, processing their stuff and spilling pop all over them all the time. I mean,
yeah.
Again, we say this in every episode. This job is hard.
So hard.
Yeah.
So hard that we should give out some money tips.
We should.
All right.
So my favorite tip, I think, would be to support our kids in having some symbolic or creative outlets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mentioned mine at the beginning was
yes.
making that scrapbook, and that might be something that a parent could do with their child. I think that would be a great thing. Mm-hmm. But the most important thing that I picked up from what Tina said is that this creative or symbolic outlet needs to be something that is meaningful for the child, right? So where I might think, oh, a scrapbook is a great idea, my child might be not so much into that. And they might feel like, you know, I want to go through nature and spend my time that way, maybe a certain time every month and doing that. I don't know, but I think that tapping into what is meaningful for the child is what's important.
I'm not an expert on grief like Tina, but one of the things I've noticed is related to what you're suggesting, and that mm-hmm. is oftentimes people will think that they can't stop feeling bad, because if they stop feeling bad, that means they've forgotten the person who died, mm-hmm. who they loved, and they never want to forget. And so those kinds of creative, meaningful activities that honor the memory of the person, that sort of make that statement loud and clear, I have not forgotten. Mm-hmm. In some ways, that can help people move past the bad, sad, terrible feelings that they have, because they've found a meaningful, creative way to honor the memory of that person.
I think that's so true, because sometimes I think we equate our consistent suffering with how much we loved the person.
Yes.
And now we're kind of trading in that suffering a little bit for a more positive outlet, and that equates to love as well.
Yes.
Okay.
One money tip from me.
Mm-hmm.
This is a proactive, preventative one.
Okay.
People often feel regret when someone has passed away, like, oh, I wish I had said I love you. Mm-hmm. I wish I had expressed my gratitude. There's an activity that we do in positive psychology that's called the gratitude activity, and that's when we write a letter or we go make a phone call or we go visit somebody and we express our gratitude for that person in our life. So what I would encourage people to do is to try to live your life so that you don't have regrets over not having said, I love you enough, or not having said, you mean something and you're important to me enough.
Mm-hmm.
And to practice that, to really work on telling people, I love you, I'm glad you're in my life.
Yeah. This reminds me of a story I'm going to tell real quick, and I don't remember all the details really well. I'm a little bit fuzzy, but there was a story done. It was done in another country that I'm not remembering, but mm-hmm. the culture there was one where they didn't really express their feelings and emotions very much, and there was a catastrophic disaster that happened where lots and lots of people lost their lives. And someone set up an empty phone booth in their backyard and invited anyone to come in and make a phone call to their loved ones, their deceased loved ones. And apparently people drove hours and hours and hours and piled into this phone booth and made these phone calls to their loved ones. And some of the calls were translated, and hearing the expressions of love that they were able to say that they couldn't say in any other way was just amazing.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
It is now time for us to share a resource or two. You got something?
I do. I have a book called Why Do People Die? By Cynthia McGregor.
I know where you got that.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Tina Barrett.
I did get it from Dr. Tina Barrett. Yeah. She's got a lot of resources.
She said it's a really good, straightforward read.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a resource, too, and it's also related to Dr. Tina Barrett.
Mm-hmm.
I had mentioned, I think, earlier that she runs a grief camp.
Yeah.
It's a week-long summer camp for kids who've experienced the death of a loved one. I think that just makes me realize how important it is for kids to have a chance to come together with other kids
mm-hmm.
and to realize that their grief is normal and natural, and to be able to be together and cry together and celebrate the lives of the people they love together. So something like grief camp,
mm-hmm.
but also finding a grief resource center in your area. I know in the Portland area, there's a thing called the Dougie Center, and it's got fabulous resources for that community.
Mm-hmm.
I bet there's one in most communities, larger communities.
I hope there is, yeah.
Yeah,
because we can think of, oh my gosh, hundreds of people we know in this community who have been really supported and helped by Tina's work.
Remarkable.
Those camps, yes.
Yeah. It's time now for us to stop.
Okay.
And I'd like to say before we end, I'm glad that you're my podcasting partner. Sarah Polinchek.
I'm glad that you're mine too.
Thank you. And even though I'm being cheesy, I also want to say thanks to the Charles Engelhardt Foundation. They support us. I want to say thanks to the listeners.
And thanks again to Dr. Tina Barrett. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.